Silence Montaigne closed the door to the common room, then turned and pressed her back against it. She tried to still her racing heart by breathing in and out. Had she made any obvious signs? Did they know she'd recognized them? William Ann passed by, wiping her hands on a cloth. Mother? The young woman asked, pausing. Mother? Are you? Fetch the book. Quickly, child. William Ann's face went pale, then she hurried into the back pantry. Silence clutched her apron to still her nerves, then joined William Ann as the girl came out of the pantry with a thick leather satchel. White flour dusted its cover and spine from the hiding place. Silence took the satchel and opened it on the high kitchen counter, revealing a collection of loose-leaf papers. Most had faces drawn on them. As Silence rifled through the pages, William Ann moved to the peephole for spying into the common room. For a few minutes, the only sound to accompany Silence's thumping heart was that of hastily turned pages. It's the man with the long neck, isn't it? William Ann asked. I remember his face from one of the bounties. That's just Lamentation Winebear, a petty horse thief. He's barely worth 2 measures of silver. Who then? The man in the back? With the hat? Silence shook her head, finding a sequence of pages at the bottom of her pile. She inspected the drawings. God beyond, she thought. I can't decide if I want it to be them or not. At least her hands had stopped shaking. William Ann scurried back and craned her neck over Silence's shoulder. At 14, the girl was already taller than her mother. A fine thing to suffer, a child taller than you. Though William Ann grumbled about being awkward and lanky, her slender build foreshadowed a beauty to come. She took after her father. Oh, God, beyond, William Ann said, raising a hand to her mouth. You mean? Chesterton Divide, Silence said. The shape of the chin, the look in the eyes, they were the same. He walked right into our hands with 4 of his men. The bounty on those 5 would be enough to pay her supply needs for a year, maybe 2. Her eyes flickered to the words below the pictures, printed in harsh, bold letters. Extremely dangerous. Wanted for murder, rape, extortion. And of course, there was the big one at the end. And assassination. Silence had always wondered if Chesterton and his men had intended to kill the governor of the most powerful fort city on this continent, or if it had been an accident. A simple robbery gone wrong. Either way, Chesterton understood what he'd done. Before the incident, he had been a common, if accomplished, highway bandit. Now he was something greater, something far more dangerous. Chesterton knew that if he were captured, there would be no mercy, no quarter. Last Port had painted Chesterton as an anarchist, a menace, and a psychopath. Chesterton had no reason to hold back, so he didn't. Oh, God beyond, Silence thought, looking at the continuing list of his crimes on the next page. Beside her, William Ann whispered the words to herself. He's out there? She asked. But where? The merchants, Silence said. What? William Ann rushed back to the peephole. The wood there, indeed all around the kitchen, had been scrubbed so hard that it had been bleached white. Sabruki had been cleaning again. I can't see it, William Ann said. Look closer. Silence hadn't seen it at first either, even though she spent each night with the book, memorizing its faces. A few moments later, William Ann gasped, raising her hand to her mouth. That seems so foolish of him. Why is he going about perfectly visible like this, even in disguise? Everyone will remember just another band of fool merchants from the fort who thought they could brave the forests. It's a clever ruse. When they vanish from the paths in a few days, it will be assumed, if anyone cares to wonder, that the shades got them. Besides, This way, Chesterton can travel quickly and in the open, visiting way stops and listening for information. Was this how Chesterton discovered good targets to hit? Had they come through her way stop before? The thought made her stomach turn. She had fed criminals many times. Some were regulars. Every man was probably a criminal out in the forests, if only for ignoring taxes imposed by the fort folk. Chesterton and his men were different. She didn't need the list of crimes to know what they were capable of doing. "Where's Sabruki?" Silence said. William Ann shook herself as if coming out of a stupor. "She's feeding the pigs." "Shadows! You don't think they'd recognize her, do you?"
"No," Silence said. "I'm worried she'll recognize them."
Sabruki might only be 8, but she could be shockingly, disturbingly observant. Silence closed the book of bounties. She rested her fingers on the satchel's leather. "We're going to kill them, aren't we?" William Ann asked.
"Yes."
"How much are they worth?"
"Sometimes, child, it's not about what a man is worth."
Silence heard the faint lie in her voice. Times were increasingly tight, with the price of silver from both Bastion Hill and Lastport on the rise. Sometimes it wasn't about what a man was worth, but this wasn't one of those times.
"I'll get the poison."
William Ann left the peephole and crossed the room.
"Something light, child," Silence cautioned. "These are dangerous men. They'll notice if things are out of the ordinary."
"I'm not a fool, mother," William Ann said dryly. "I'll use fenweed. They won't taste it in the beer."
"Half dose. I don't want them collapsing at the table."
William Ann nodded, entering the old storage room, where she closed the door and began prying up floorboards to get to the poisons. Fenweed would leave the men cloudy-headed and dizzy, but wouldn't kill them. Silence didn't dare risk something more deadly. If suspicion ever came back to her way stop, her career, and likely her life, would end. She needed to remain in the minds of travelers, the crotchety but fair innkeeper who didn't ask too many questions. Her way stop was a place of perceived safety, even for the roughest of criminals. She bedded down each night with a heart full of fear that someone would realize a suspicious number of the White Fox's bounties stayed at Silence's way stop in the days preceding their demise. She went into the pantry to put away the bounty book. Here, too, the walls had been scrubbed clean, the shelves freshly sanded and dusted. That child. Who had heard of a child who would rather clean than play? Of course, given what Sabruki had been through. Silence could not help reaching onto the top shelf and feeling the crossbow she kept there. Silver bolt heads. She kept it for shades and hadn't yet turned it against a man. Drawing blood was too dangerous in the forests. It still comforted her to know that in case of a true emergency, she had the weapon at hand. Bounty book stowed, she went to check on Sabruki. The child was indeed caring for the pigs. Silence liked to keep a healthy stock, though of course not for eating. Pigs were said to ward away shades. She used any tool she could to make the way stop seem more safe. Sabruki knelt inside the pig shack. The short girl had dark skin and long black hair. Nobody would have taken her for Silence's daughter, even if they hadn't heard of Sabruki's unfortunate history. The child hummed to herself, scrubbing at the wall of the enclosure.
"Child?" Silence asked.
Sabruki turned to her and smiled. What a difference 1 year could make. Once, Silence would have sworn that this child would never smile again. Sabruki had spent her first 3 months at the way stop, staring at walls. No matter where Silence had put her, the child had moved to the nearest wall, sat down, and stared at it all day, never speaking a word. Eyes dead as those of a shade.
"Aunt Silence?" Sabruki asked. "Are you well?"
"I'm fine, child. Just plagued by memories.
Your Cleaning the pig shack now?
The walls needed a good scrubbing, Sabruki said. The pigs do so like it to be clean. Well, Jaram and Ezekiel prefer it that way. The others don't seem to care.
You don't need to clean so hard, child.
I like doing it, Sabruki said. It feels good. It's something I can do to help.
Well, it was better to clean the walls than stare blankly at them all day. Today, Silence was happy for anything that kept the child busy. Anything, so long as she didn't enter the common room. I think the pigs will like it, Silence said. Why don't you keep at it in here for a while?
Sabruki eyed her. What's wrong?
Shadows. She was so observant. There are some men with rough tongues in the common room, Silence said. I won't have you picking up their cussing.
I'm not a child, Aunt Silence.
Yes, you are, Silence said firmly. And you'll obey. Don't think I won't take a switch to your backside.
Sabruki rolled her eyes, but went back to work and began humming to herself. Silence let a little of her grandmother's ways out when she spoke with Sabruki. The child responded well to sternness. She seemed to crave it, perhaps as a symbol that someone was in control. Silence wished she actually were in control. But she was a Forescout, the surname taken by her grandparents and the others who had left homeland first and explored this continent. Yes, she was a Forescout, and she'd be damned before she'd let anyone know how absolutely powerless she felt much of the time. Silence crossed the backyard of the large inn, noting William Ann inside the kitchen making a paste to dissolve in the beer. Silence passed her by and looked in on the stable. Unsurprisingly, Chesterton had said they'd be leaving after their meal. While a lot of folks sought the relative safety of a way stop at night, Chesterton and his men would be accustomed to sleeping in the forests. Even with the shades about, they would feel more comfortable in a camp of their own devising than they would in a way stop bed. Inside the stable, Dob, the old stable hand, had just finished brushing down the horses. He wouldn't have watered them. Silence had a standing order to not do that until last. This is well done, Dob, Silence said. Why don't you take your break now? He nodded to her with a mumbled, Thank you, ma'am. He'd find the front porch and his pipe, as always. Dob hadn't two wits to rub together, and he hadn't a clue about what she really did at the way stop, but he'd been with her since before William's death. He was as loyal a man as she'd ever found. Silence shut the door after him, then fetched some pouches from the locked cabinet at the rear of the stable. She checked each one in the dim light, then set them on the grooming table and heaved the first saddle onto its owner's back. She was near finished with the saddling when the door eased open. She froze, immediately thinking of the pouches on the table. Why hadn't she stuffed them in her apron? Sloppy.
Silence, Forescout,
a smooth voice said from the doorway. Silence stifled a groan and turned to confront her visitor.
Theopolis, she said. It's not polite to sneak about on a woman's property. I should have you thrown out for trespassing.
Now. That would be rather like the horse kicking at the man who feeds him. Hmm?
Theopolis leaned his gangly frame against the doorway, folding his arms. He wore simple clothing, no markings of his station. A fort tax collector often didn't want random passers to know of his profession. Clean-shaven, his face always had that same patronizing smile on it. His clothing was too clean, too new, to be that of one who lived out in the forests. Not that he was a dandy, nor was he a fool. Theopolis was dangerous, just a different kind of dangerous from most.
Why are you here, Theopolis? She said, hefting the last saddle onto the back of a snorting roan gelding.
Why do I always come to you, Silence? It's not because of your cheerful countenance.
I'm paid up on taxes.
That's because you're mostly exempt from taxes, Theopolis said. But you haven't paid me for last month's shipment of silver.
Things have been a little dry lately. It's coming.
And the bolts for your crossbow? Theopolis asked. One wonders if you're trying to forget about the price of those silver bolt heads. And the shipment of replacement sections for your protection rings?
His whining accent made her wince as she buckled the saddle on.
Theopolis. Shadows, what a day. Oh my, Theopolis said, walking over to the grooming table. He picked up one of the pouches. What are these now? That looks like wet leek sap. I've heard that it glows at night if you shine the right kind of light upon it. Is this one of the white fox's mysterious secrets?
She snatched the pouch away. Don't say that name, she hissed.
He grinned. You have a bounty. Delightful. I have always wondered how you tracked them. Poke a pinhole in that, attach it to the underside of the saddle, then follow the dripping trail it leaves. You could probably track them a long way. Kill them far from here. Keep suspicion off the little way stop.
Yes, Theopolis was dangerous, but she needed someone to turn in her bounties for her. Theopolis was a rat, and like all rats, he knew the best holes, troughs, and crannies. He had connections in Lastport and had managed to get her the money in the name of the White Fox without revealing her.
I've been tempted to turn you in lately, you know, Theopolis said. Many a group keeps a betting pool on the identity of the infamous fox. I could be a rich man with this knowledge.
You're already a rich man, she snapped. And though you're many things, you are not an idiot. This has worked just fine for a decade. Don't tell me you'd trade wealth for a little notoriety.
He smiled, but did not contradict her. He kept half of what she earned from each bounty. It was a fine arrangement for Theopolis. No danger to him, which was how she knew he liked it. He was a civil servant, not a bounty hunter. The only time she'd seen him kill the man he'd murdered couldn't fight back.
You know me too well, Silence, Theopolis said with a laugh. Too well indeed. My, my, a bounty. I wonder who it is. I'll have to go look in the common room.
You'll do nothing of the sort. Shadows. You think the face of a tax collector won't spook them? Don't you go walking in and spoiling things.
Peace, Silence, he said, still grinning. I obey your rules. I am careful not to show myself around here often, and I don't bring suspicion to you. I couldn't stay today anyway. I merely came to give you an offer. Only now you probably won't need it. Ah, such a pity. After all the trouble I went to in your name.
She felt cold. What help could you possibly give me?
He took a sheet of paper from his satchel, then carefully unfolded it with two long fingers. He moved to hold it up, but she snatched it from him.
What is this?
A way to relieve you of your debt, Silence. A way to prevent you from ever having to worry again.
The paper was a writ of seizure, an authorization for Silence's creditors, Theopolis, to claim her property as payment. The forts claimed jurisdiction over the roadways and the land to either side of them. They did send soldiers out to patrol them, occasionally.
I take it back, Theopolis, she spat. You most certainly are a fool. You'd give up everything we have for a greedy land snatch?
Of course not, Silence. This wouldn't be giving up anything at all.
Why, I do so feel bad seeing you constantly in my debt. Wouldn't it be more efficient if I took over the finances of the Waystop? You would remain working here and hunting bounties as you always have. Only you would no longer have to worry about your debts. Hmm?
She crumpled the paper in her hand.
You'd turn me and mine into slaves, Theopolis. Oh, don't be so dramatic. Those in Lastport have begun to worry that such an important waypoint as this is owned by an unknown element. You are drawing attention, Silence. I should think that is the last thing you want.
Silence crumpled the paper further in her hand, fist tight. Horses shuffled in their stalls. Theopolis grinned.
Well, he said, perhaps it won't be needed. Perhaps this bounty of yours is a big one. Hmm? Any clues to give me so I don't sit wondering all day? Get out, she whispered. Dear Silence, he said, four scout blood, stubborn to the last breath. They say your grandparents were the first of the first people to come scout this continent, the first to homestead the forests, the first to stake a claim on hell itself.
Don't call the forests that. This is my home.
But it is how men saw this land, before the evil. Doesn't that make you curious? Hell, land of the damned, where the shadows of the dead made their home. I keep wondering, is there really a shade of your departed husband guarding this place? Or is it just another story you tell people? To make them feel safe. Hmm? You spend a fortune in silver. That offers the real protection. And I never have been able to find a record of your marriage. Of course, if there wasn't one, that would make dear William Ann a
go!
He grinned, but tipped his hat to her and stepped out. She heard him climb into the saddle, then ride off. Night would soon fall. It was probably too much to hope that the shades would take Theopolis. She'd long suspected that he had a hiding hole somewhere near, probably a cavern he kept lined with silver. She breathed in and out, trying to calm herself. Theopolis was frustrating, but he didn't know everything. She forced her attention back to the horses and got out a bucket of water. She dumped the contents of the pouches into it, then gave a hearty dose to the horses, who each drank thirstily. Pouches that dripped sap in the way Theopolis indicated would be too easy to spot. What would happen when her bounties removed their saddles at night and found the pouches? They'd know someone was coming for them. No, she needed something less obvious.
How am I going to manage this? She whispered as a horse drank from her bucket.
Shadows. They're reaching for me on all sides. Kill Theopolis. That was probably what grandmother would have done. She considered it.
No, she thought. I won't become that. I won't become her.
Theopolis was a thug and a scoundrel, but he had not broken any laws, nor had he done anyone direct harm that she knew. There had to be rules, even out here. There had to be lines. Perhaps in that respect she wasn't so different from the fort folk.
She'd find another way.
Theopolis only had a writ of debt. He had been required to show it to her. That meant she had a day or two to come up with his money. All neat and orderly. In the fort cities, they claimed to have civilization. Those rules gave her a chance. She left the stable. A glance through the window into the common room showed her William Ann delivering drinks to the merchants of Chesterton's gang. Silence stopped to watch. Behind her, the forests shivered in the wind. Silence listened, then turned to face them. You could tell fort folk by the way they refused to face the forests. They averted their eyes, never looking into the depths. Those solemn trees covered almost every inch of this continent,
those leaves shading the ground, still, silent. Animals lived out there, but Fort surveyors declared that there were no predators. The shades had gotten those long ago, drawn by the shedding of blood. Staring into the forests seemed to make them retreat. The darkness of their depths withdrew. The stillness gave way to the sound of rodents picking through fallen leaves. A forescout knew to look the forests straight on. A forescout knew that the surveyors were wrong. There was a predator out there. The forest itself was one. Silence turned and walked to the door into the kitchen. Keeping the waystop had to be her first goal, so she was committed to collecting Chesterton's bounty now. If she couldn't pay Theopolis, she had little faith that everything would stay the same. He'd have a hand around her throat, as she couldn't leave the waystop. She had no fort citizenship, and times were too tight for the local homesteaders to take her in. No, she'd have to stay and work the waystop for Theopolis, and he would squeeze her dry, taking larger and larger percentages of the bounties. She pushed open the door to the kitchen. Sabruki sat at the kitchen table holding the crossbow in her lap.
God beyond,
Silence gasped, pulling the door closed as she stepped inside.
Child, what are you?
Sabruki looked up at her. Those haunted eyes were back, eyes void of life and emotion, eyes like a shade's.
We have visitors, Aunt Silence,
Sabruki said in a cold, monotone voice. The crossbow's winding crank sat next to her. She had managed to load the thing and cock it, all on her own.
I coated the bolt's tip with black blood. I did that right, didn't I? That way the poison will kill him for sure.
Child.
Silence stepped forward. Sabruki turned the crossbow in her lap, holding it at an angle to support it, one small hand on the trigger. The point turned toward Silence. Sabruki stared ahead, eyes blank.
This won't work, Sabruki, Silence said, stern. Even if you were able to lift that thing into the common room, you wouldn't hit him. And even if you did, his men would kill us all in retribution.
I wouldn't mind, Sabruki said softly, so long as I got to kill him, so long as I pulled the trigger.
You care nothing for us? Silence snapped. I take you in, give you a home, and this is your payment? You steal a weapon? You threaten me?
Sabruki blinked.
What is wrong with you? Silence said. You'd shed blood in this place of sanctuary? Bring the shades down upon us, beating at our protections? If they got through, they'd kill everyone under my roof. People I've promised safety. How dare you?
Sabruki shook, as if coming awake. Her mask broke, and she dropped the crossbow. Silence heard a snap, and the catch released. She felt the bolt pass within an inch of her cheek, then break the window behind.
Shadows.
Had the bolt grazed Silence? Had Sabruki drawn blood? Silence reached up with a shaking hand, but blessedly felt no blood. The bolt hadn't hit her. A moment later, Sabruki was in her arms, sobbing. Silence knelt down, holding the child close.
Hush, dear one. It's all right. It's all right.
I heard it all, Sabruki whispered. Mother never cried out. She knew I was there. She was strong, Aunt Silence. That's why I could be strong, even when the blood came down, soaking my hair. I heard it. I heard it all.
Silence closed her eyes, holding Sabruki tight. She herself had been the only one willing to investigate the smoking homestead. Sabruki's father had stayed at the waystop on occasion. A good man. As good a man as was left after the evil took homeland, that was. In the smoldering remains of the homestead, Silence had found the corpses of a dozen people. Each family member had been slaughtered by Chesterton and his men right down to the children. The only one left had been Sabruki, the youngest, who had been shoved into the crawl space under the floorboards in the bedroom. She'd lain there, soaked in her mother's blood, soundless even as Silence found her. She'd only discovered the girl because Chesterton had been careful, lining the room with silver dust to protect against shades as he prepared to kill. Silence had tried to recover some of the dust that had trickled between the floorboards and had run across eyes, staring up at her through the slits. Chesterton had burned 13 different homesteads over the last year, over 50 people murdered. Sabruki was the only one who had escaped him. The girl trembled as she heaved with sobs.
Why? Why?
There is no reason. I'm sorry. What else could she do? Offer some foolish platitude or comfort about the god beyond? These were the forests. You didn't survive on platitudes. Silence did hold the girl until her crying began to subside. William Ann entered, then stilled beside the kitchen table, holding a tray of empty mugs. Her eyes flickered toward the fallen crossbow, then at the broken window.
"You'll kill him?" Sabruki whispered. "You'll bring him to justice?"
"Justice died in homeland," Silence said. "But yes, I'll kill him. I promise it to you, child."
Stepping timidly, William Ann picked up the crossbow, then turned it, displaying its now broken bow. Silence breathed out. She should never have left the thing where Sabruki could get to it.
"Care for the patrons, William Ann," Silence said. "I'll take Sabruki upstairs."
William Ann nodded, glancing at the broken window.
"No blood was shed," Silence said. "We will be fine. Though if you get a moment, see if you can find the bolt. The head is silver."
This was hardly a time when they could afford to waste money. William Ann stowed the crossbow in the pantry as Silence carefully set Sabruki on a kitchen stool. The girl clung to her, refusing to let go, so Silence relented and held her for a time longer. William Ann took a few deep breaths as if to calm herself, then pushed back out into the common room to distribute drinks. Eventually, Sabruki let go long enough for Silence to mix a draft. She carried the girl up the stairs to the loft above the common room, where the three of them made their beds. Dob slept in the stable, and the guests in the nicer rooms on the second floor.
"You're going to make me sleep,"
Sabruki said, regarding the cup with reddened eyes.
"The world will seem a brighter place in the morning," Silence said. "And I can't risk you sneaking out after me tonight."
The girl reluctantly took the draft, then drank it down.
"I'm sorry about the crossbow."
"We will find a way for you to work off the cost of fixing it."
That seemed to comfort Sabruki. She was a homesteader, forests born.
"You used to sing to me at night,"
Sabruki said softly, closing her eyes, lying back.
"When you first brought me here? After,
she swallowed.
"I wasn't certain you noticed."
Silence hadn't been certain Sabruki noticed anything during those times.
"I did."
Silence sat down on the stool beside Sabruki's cot. She didn't feel like singing, so she began humming. It was the lullaby she'd sung to William Ann during the hard times right after her birth. Before long, the words came out, unbidden.
"Hush now, my dear one. Be not afraid. Night comes upon us, but sunlight will break. Sleep now, my dear one. Let your tears fade. Darkness surrounds us, but someday we'll wake."
She held Sabruki's hand until the child fell asleep. The window by the bed overlooked the courtyard, so Silence could see as Dob brought out Chesterton's horses. The five men in their fancy merchant clothing stomped down off the porch and climbed into their saddles. They rode in a file out onto the roadway, then the forests enveloped them.